Sports.
Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's gonna bounce down, it's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 8 p.m. You're listening to the Unused Substitutes, your Rowdies Talk Radio, your Green and Gold Gospel, live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and sponsored by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt, and on the other end of the internet from me is a guy who's locked in. He's ready to go. He's in the pizone. Dan, how you doing tonight?
Oh, man, now I want another pizone.
You just did it last night, right?
Two nights ago.
You know you can get Hot Pockets anytime.
It's not a Hot Pocket. That is an insult to everything the Pizzone is and stands for. It is one of the greatest things from fast food ever.
It's a Hot Pocket on steroids.
Then, you know, juice them up because that thing is heavenly.
If that's a crime, then you're, like most other people in Pasco, guilty of something weird.
I mean, the Tampa Bay Times just released a whole thing today about the history of weird Pasco politicians. So
I saw it. I didn't even get to read it, but I did like the picture of a guy. It looked like he was in a chicken suit, but a chicken suit that had a Speedo or something built
into
it.
Well, he was a former stripper who was wearing a big bird costume, who became a lawyer, and then I think like ran for office or got elected, and then was like running a fraud scheme, and then got arrested.
And you wonder why we don't come to your place more often.
I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a party. You never know what's going to happen.
I can't hang with Pasco.
I've been doing it for nearly 20, a little over 20 years now, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm officially definitely too old for that.
I mean, I turned out fine, right, guys?
Yeah, just you wait. You're going to 5-10 years, you're going to have to move at least out of Pasco.
I would like to.
You won't be able to handle it anymore.
I mean, I want to get out of here now, but while I'm here, I'm going to try to make it a better place.
It's the least we can do, right?
Exactly.
Well, let's try and make someone's Wednesday night a better place. We got a home game to talk about. Like, we got a game that we got to witness from really good seats too. Shout out to Cody for that. Cody, who was mentioned in the did you read the USL like Q&A article today?
No. I didn't even see it.
Their new writer guy, I think John Arlia, does like questions from fans. Both Pendleton and Cody made the final cut into the issue.
Nice. Two well-deserving gentlemen.
So last Saturday, your Tampa Bay Rowdies with a 2-0 home opener win in front of an announced sellout crowd of 7,200 plus. Over the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. That was fun.
Yeah, it was like so nice.
Everything
to be
about that was fun. I mean, what's your good, bad, ugly?
I mean, Sean Barry gets a massive shout out. He had a heck of a performance, and you know, from the adversity he faced last year, going down early in the season with an injury, and then coming back and his first first home appearance for us, and just absolutely heck of an experience. our defense, like this team defending. I mean, we've only allowed, what, one shot on target in two games? And we're just, you know, it's great. Obviously, you know, you want a little bit more going forward, but you scored, what, we have three, our goal differential is three, because, yeah.
Yeah, plus three.
Yep. So it's looking good defensively. Zach Steinberger is fantastic. That guy doesn't quit. Leo Fernandez moving a little bit, doing some wing back-ish type play, and he's actually looking really good defensively. It helps when you have a monster like Diakite backing you up there. The guy's a brick wall. It's so far so good. I don't want to, you know, obviously it's only two games in, but this team is showing some steel, some grit, and I like that. Going forward, man, we're not producing much going forward. Obviously, it's weird to say that when you're 2-0 and, you know, you scored three goals so far in two games. But I think, you know, one was an early pen won by Tejada that Guenzati converted, and then a corner kick that rolled out to Sean, and he buried it. And then, you know, it was an individual moment of brilliance from him going through cutting it through the box like that. And then
I see what you did there, by the way, with he buried it.
Yeah, you like that?
That was my tweet on Saturday night.
Oh, I didn't see that. But laying it off there at the end for the second goal to Steinberger to basically, you know, just redirect it in. It was good. You'd like to see more of that. But I think that's coming. Since, you know, we have the new Rays owners, I'll make the baseball analogy here of usually the pitching comes later in the season, you know, in the season, because they got to catch up. The hitting, I believe, has to catch up to the pitching in the season, and our offense needs to warm up and get fully connected there. And I think Neil's still trying to find the best partnership to make those things happen. I think the best is yet to come. But this team shows promise. I don't really think I have an ugly. I think the game was mostly balanced from the official. I think there might have been one or two, but that's going to happen in every game. I think the teams both played well. But I think overall it was a good game. I mean, I think it was you who asked about it, about scoring early on a Bob Lilly coach team. And, you asked it to Zach, and Steinberger said,
right,
he was saying that, if you score early, it changes the entire game. Otherwise, they bunker, and then they'll more than likely hit you late and win 1-0. But scoring early changes the entire dynamic against that team. It changes his whole game plan.
I was glad to see us get a goal in the first half, because watching that, especially we had the benefit of watching from the midfield, which was good for watching the defense on both sides. Not so great for seeing especially our goal in the second half, but looked really great on replays. I finally got to see what they were talking about when they were talking about Barry just kind of slicing through the defense. Because I was, and like I said, like you said too, our defense has been good so far. They I think it's one shot, haven't allowed any goals. Only team in either conference to not allow a goal yet. One of four undefeated teams, three in the East. We're gonna face one of them this weekend, by the way, St. Louis. There was so much good. I heard a lot of compliments about the new history wall over on the main. I call it the main stand, I guess. I didn't go in that area at all because we came in through the midfield section. So I'm going to definitely check that out when we have a home game in 2 weeks, or I guess a week from Saturday, actually. I think we made one change from the week before. Brandon Allen started instead of Tejada. It was just everything really. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to pick out like individual good things, but there's a lot of it. I was also as impressive as I have been with our defense, especially playing with the back three. Pittsburgh's defense was really solid too. At one point, I think I described it as it looks like an escape room, trying to watch our guys get through the defense. That was my comment during the game. I think after, you know, with some time going by, I say it was tougher to get through there than the McNulty Garage.
Oh,
so good, good effort for the guy, especially Barry's move at the end. But you could definitely see that getting that first goal kind of it definitely did change the face of the game. It felt like we got forward a lot more, and you know, it was 1-0 until what, like the 85th. But I didn't feel worried about giving up a goal. Pittsburgh did create some chances. You could see what they were trying to do. It didn't necessarily come off for them, and you know, maybe one or two chances would have. You know, their forward, one of their forwards did a really really good Shane Hill impersonation in front of a fairly open net that saved a goal scoring opportunity. But yeah, I thought everything, you know, it's hard to tell really what we're seeing right now. The first game against Memphis, you're playing a brand new club that's, you know, these guys are playing their first competitive game together. I think we learned a lot more about what the Rowdies are last week than we did the week before, because I think a Pittsburgh team, even beginning of the season, is still pretty well put together. They've obviously got some work to do on the offensive end, but their defense and the way they played was solid. So I'm impressed to come out of there with a 2-0 win. As far as bads, I don't really have much, you know, bad or ugly. I thought the refereeing was pretty good. There was a couple calls, and there was an offside one or two that seemed like maybe it was not really as that close, and somehow still got called. But what I wanted to throw out there was, we were talking about, you know, they've talked about it in the preseason so far. Neil said it, the players have said it. We talked a little bit briefly about it, and you said you were going to save your comments. I'm going to make you say them now so I can hear your side. Are we seeing what they've been saying they're going to do yet? Are we seeing the attractive attacking soccer? There was two shots on goal last week, and we scored. I mean, both of them. I mean, to me, attractive attacking soccer is scoring goals and winning games. When you look at the stats, and it's weird to look at stats 2 weeks in because you've got so many other factors to consider, but we're sitting down at 34th in the league with 13 shots total, and you've got teams like San Antonio, and I know we're talking apples to oranges here, especially with a Western Conference team, who's put up 41 shots in the first two games. And not that I expect that we're going to be at 41 shots, but based on, you know, kind of what was being said, did you expect to see more so far, or is this about where you thought the guys would be at this point in time?
I think we're about where I thought we'd be this, like, two games in and considering the opposition. I don't know. I think on the pitch, like Memphis, and against the team, you're not sure how they're playing, how they play, and what they're doing too much. It's hard to prepare and get ready and plan. And I think against a Bob Lilly coach team, you're not going to get, you know, like a tiki-taka Barcelona type game going forward. I think for me, I appreciate everything that was on Saturday. I think it was beautiful soccer to me, of really really good defense, holding shape, and, you know, finding the spots to, you know, picking your spots and taking your chances and finishing them. So I think right now we're right where we should be. Would I like to see more chances? Obviously, like, goals are the most exciting part of soccer. But I mean, we had two in that game, that home game. But I think as we get different opposition that are less compact and, you know, we might see more. But it's early. I think maybe in our, what is it, who do we play? The next home game is Loudon. Is that who they? What do
you, yeah.
I think we might see, hopefully, I mean, I haven't watched a single one of their games. We might see some more attacking there. Like I said earlier, I think Neil is still trying to figure out his best strike partnership, and who's going to work well together to make the runs and the chemistry, really. I will say, and it's not a shout or like not a shot at Brandon Allen, but he's a big dude, man, and I think he lost some physical battles that he probably should have won for a guy that size. I'm not harping on him. I just hope to see more for a guy that big. He's not a small man, and he was getting pushed around a little bit from Pittsburgh's defense this weekend.
So speaking of some physical battles, and I mentioned this during the game to you guys. I don't know if you saw it or got a chance to go back and watch it. So at the kickoff party last week, we got a chance to talk to Caleb Richards, nice young guy. You know, you got a chance to kind of see him up front and see him in person, see him play on Saturday night. There's a moment kind of mid late second half, Pittsburgh forward number 8, I forget his name, but he's the same guy that skied the shot directly over the crossbar from about 9-10 yards out, it felt like, goes up for a header, and like Caleb doesn't go up for it because the guy's got him beat. I mean, the guy has several inches on him to begin with, and probably, I'm going to say 20 pounds at least. He was not fat either. While he's up in the air getting his head on the ball, something happens behind him. I don't know if Caleb, if it was a forearm or something or whatever, but he gets his head on the ball and then the guy just crumples and gets up and looks at the ref like, aren't you going to call it? And the ref kind of gives him this look like, that guy took you out. You want me to call something? Like, are you kidding me? So, he's a 20-year-old kid, but he's pretty crafty in the back line.
Yeah, I also I didn't see that happen, and I haven't rewatched. But I'd also like to point out that Dom Maduro's not exactly a tall guy, but that kid can jump. He went up for a header in the second half, and like out jumped a guy a good couple inches taller than him, and I was incredibly impressed.
So kind of what made me wonder about the style so far. And again, I'm not like taking shots at the players of the team. I honestly just don't know what to expect. Hopefully, I have the next week off of work next week. So I'm going to try and go to training, one day and kind of watch and see what they're doing and see, what I can tell. But what brought it to my mind was, and I retweeted this from the podcast account on Monday. Chris Hockman, who he wrote for USL last year and is kind of like freelancing now, lives in the area, kind of did like a little analytics, a little tactical review. I don't know if you – did you see the tweets?
I didn't actually. I don't know. I haven't been on. I've been ridiculously busy everywhere else that I haven't been able to do too much of the Twitter, which I'm sure is better for everybody.
All right, so he says, crossing accuracy 8% was definitely a downer on what was a very good night. Defense was very strong, holding the no shots. Good defense wins championships. And an 86% tackle success rate's great. Rowdies were a little too reliant on the wings. Would like to see more play up the middle or an improvement in crossing. Stopped Hounds in the middle well. Valesky and Dos Santos were forced central, restricting the Hounds. And this is, it kind of goes back to what we've talked about. We've had this kind of crossing problem for a while. I mean, Marcel and Martin seem to have like that connection. I mean, I think Marcel could find that connection with just about anybody, but outside of that, we've had some problems with accurate crossing. Jonathan Silva pointed out that the formation, the 3-5-2 doesn't really lend to playing up the middle with two wide wings. Most of the attacking play is going to funnel to the touch lines. Definitely needs to improve crossing, but that's been a 3-4 year issue now. Someone else chimed in later. I don't have the whole thread open in front of me, but Neil had said that he's not married to a formation. He's just looking to see what's going to get the best results. So there might be some possibilities, possible shifts, maybe not just in personnel, but in lineups that could, alter the style of play, which might result in more of what we're thinking we should be seeing. But if like your plan A is to push out to the wings and cross, and you're having accuracy issues, like there's got to be a plan B at some point, right?
I'm curious to why you're worried about a plan B when we're 2-0 and just won 2-0.
Because I want to be 3-0.
Well, we have to play the third game first.
Yeah, I know. And the third game coming up, and we'll talk about it in a few minutes, is going to be probably so far our toughest test of the year. And then we get to come back home for a three-game homestand against some teams that we look like we're likely going to get some results from. So we'll get to that in a minute. You're man of the match?
I think that's everybody's man of the match in Sean Barry.
Yeah, it's got to be Sean Barry. I mean, he kind of did the triple. Man of the match, made team of the week, and just got called up to the Puerto Rican national team for CONCACAF League of Nations. So Sean Barry will not be with the team this weekend as he takes joins Puerto Rico to take on Grenada on Sunday. So who do you project or who do you think could get a look at cracking the lineup with Sean Barry out?
If Naj is healthy, I would probably expect him to make his first appearance of the year there. He's probably the best fit. I mean, he can play defense, like come back to play defense, and he's got the speed to go forward and is dangerous. We saw that when he was against us and for the bit he played last year. So I would expect Naj, if he's 100% ready to go. I mean, he might only go 60 and then we see something else, but we'll see. That's where I would go if I was somehow, coaching this team.
If Naj isn't ready, do you think this might be a place where you see a possible formation change and some different lineups coming out?
No, I think you could probably shift somebody over there. I mean, I don't know if Tenari's comfortable or... I think you maybe even shift Murad might be, I don't think he's on the right side. We got, who else is that? You might see Caleb out there, right? Even though, or Leon or Seba, might see Seba out there. We have plenty of people that could, I mean, you know, you mentioned Doherty, he might be able to. We have versatile players that can play several spots. So I would think Naj is ready.
If he's healthy and ready to go, it'd be it's a good option to have. All right. So moving on from that, if you've been watching online or watching the local news lately, or possibly you were involved in this, there were some issues at the McNulty parking garage, the garage over the old Rowdy's Den last weekend. I'm not going to spend a ton of time talking about it, except that the Rowdy's did put out a statement. The garage is privately owned. It's not owned by the team. It's just one they have a deal with in place on game days. If you were affected by the parking issues, they are offering 2 free tickets to a upcoming home game. If you have your parking receipt, but I saw a lot of people saying, because who gets a receipt for parking anymore? Especially if you've been waiting for 2 hours, who's going to wait like 5 more minutes for that? If you don't, still give them a call at the main team phone number, and they will work with you, get it figured out. I did see some tweets like that night when I got home talking about the parking issues, and I hadn't heard anything else about it. I will say, you know, the common refrain on the internet is don't read the comments. When they posted their post on Facebook, and we know how some of the comments on Facebook can be, I was a little nervous to see what the response was, but everybody was pretty, I don't know, positive about it, and thanked them for, doing something about it, offering some kind of thing to make up for it, even though it wasn't, you know, something in their control. So, it was nice to see the internet being nice for once. But if you were affected by that, give them a call and hopefully they can work something out for you.
Yeah, I thought it was I wasn't online Twitter much after the game or the next day, but I saw that come through because like the Rowdy statement, because I have notifications on, and I thought it was good PR. It's a good and a great move to be proactive about it and try to do something for the fans that were affected.
So if there wasn't something else I already had planned for the I Love You or the We Love You, I'd throw this in there, but I'm going to give the shout out to Silva's fiance Anna, because she kind of led off with a positive comment about how, you know, I don't have a receipt. Thank you for offering this. Is there something, you know, that we can still do? thanks in advance. And I'm just going to pretend like her comment set the tone for everybody else. And the people decided to be nice. So thank you, Anna.
I agree. She's good people.
All right. The other thing that's come out in the last day was announced, I think, the day after the game on Sunday, that they'd be making an announcement on Tuesday. Something, the next step in this partnership with Norwich City, the yellow and green dream. And yesterday, I'm just going to read the press release if you guys haven't seen it with the details. In partnership with England's Norwich City FC, the Tampa Bay Rowdies are giving the best youth soccer players from the Tampa Bay region and beyond a once-in-a-lifetime chance to train alongside professionals and live their yellow and green dream. The contest will see the creation of a new soccer camp in Tampa Bay for players aged 15 to 19. So I just missed it since my birthday was on Monday. The first camp is scheduled to take place in July of this year at the Waters Avenue Complex in Tampa. Players in the camp will work under the direction of senior members of both the Rowdies and Norwich City FC soccer staff, including Norwich City legend Grant Holt. Over the course of 1 week, the camp will end with an up-close look at the Rowdies in action during their match against St. Louis FC on July 20th. The best prospects from the first camp will be invited back for a second camp in Tampa Bay in November. The best player from the second camp will be sent with a guardian on an unforgettable trip to England for a 7-day professional academy experience with Norwich City. The player will also spend 2 weeks in camp with the Rowdies next preseason. Season ticket holders will be able to purchase their spot in the yellow and green dream camp starting March 19th before registration goes to the general public tomorrow, March 21st. Camp costs $300 at time of registration or $325 over three payments. Registration includes 5-day camp with full timetable, personalized uniform, daily food and drink, complimentary ticket to watch Rowdies versus St. Louis on Saturday, July 20th, invite to second camp if selected, and transportation. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I mean, it was I'm trying to find a way to phrase this and not sound like I'm being negative, because I'm not. I think it is a great thing to get local players involved and give them, you know, a chance, a huge chance, and like a memorable experience. I can see if some people were disappointed, as like it's not for fans per se, and it's for players. But this is what a partnership between two clubs is about, right? Like getting the community involved in other ways and you know, growing soccer and giving local players an opportunity to learn and grow. So I love it. I absolutely love it. But I can definitely see if there was disappointment amongst fans the way it was hyped. But I think those people need to realize that not everything is for them.
I haven't read whatever comments have led you to say that, unless it's the – I saw some of the Norwich City fans were kind of like, oh, that's it. Like, to them, probably not a huge deal because most of it's taking place over here. Also, I don't know if the loud ruckus a few seconds ago carried in over the microphone. My cats are at it again. Hopefully one's not behind the refrigerator again, so I don't feel like pulling that back out. Yeah, I mean, people are throwing around ideas like, you know, a fan exchange, like, you know, fans winning a trip to England or you know, some of their fans winning a chance to come here. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens somewhere down the line. I mean, the partnership is it does involve the Visit St. Pete Clearwater Tourism Bureau. They did a thing, you know, with the fans coming over. One of the Norwich fans wanted a chance to come to their training here last year. I'm sure something will happen down the road. A lot of people were tossed around the idea of a friendly, which I like, and I'm sure it's going to happen at some point. But, you know, this it kind of all lines up. Like, one of Neil's biggest, you know, thing outside of the main team has been developing and getting the youth of the area and the youth with Tampa Bay United more involved with kind of the senior team level. And this is kind of like a natural next step. And for the kids who have an opportunity to do this, this is gonna be kind of cool. Cause by the time they do this, I mean, it's all but certain at this point that Norwich is going to get promoted. They're going to be a Premier League team. And these kids are going to have an opportunity to go train in, you know, the best possible, like the highest level, the best possible situation setting. Like it's a good deal for them. It's a great time, I think. And Jake and I were talking about this. It's a great time for us to have linked up with a team like Norwich City. So, you know, just because this one thing wasn't, you know, something that everybody expected, then, you know, I'm sure there's going to be more things. This partnership's already paid off or done more than the Sao Paulo one did, because all that was involved was a poster. So I'm excited for it. I think it's a cool deal.
Yeah, like I said, I love it. And that's what I want to see out of partnerships with the club. And it's so far, this partnership has been absolutely great, and I love it. So hopefully it continues and things get better, and as this relationship continues to grow.
All right, so let's take a look at the rest of the Eastern Conference real quick before we start previewing St. Louis. Top of the Eastern Conference right now, North Carolina FC, 2-0, plus 4 goal differential. Wish I had included in here who they played. They beat Louisville in the opening week. So North Carolina is getting a lot of looks right now because of that win. Second place, your Tampa Bay Rowdies, 2-0, also 6 points as well, with a plus 3 goal differential. Only team in all of USL not to allow a goal yet this year. Third place, right behind us, on goal differential, is St. Louis FC. They beat Indy 11 in the first game of the year. A lot of the kind of preseason hype teams didn't have great first weeks, and you know, we snuck out that 1-0 win, which a lot of people were like, "Oh, maybe we should have done better." But considering the results, some of the other kind of preseason favorites got, I'm not too worried about it right now. Charleston Battery in fourth, Ottawa Fury in fifth, Red Bulls 2 in sixth, Atlanta United in seventh, Bethlehem Steel in eighth, Nashville 9th, Indy 11 in 10th, Louisville in 11th, Memphis 12th, Loudoun United, who's coming here in the week after this, 13th, Charlotte in 14th, Swope Park 15th, Riverhounds 16th, Hartford 17th, and the worst team ever conceived, the Birmingham Legion, dead last, 0 points, minus 3 goal differential, 2 games, 2 losses. Too bad, guys.
Right where they belong.
Exactly. I'm still keeping an eye on flight prices. I'm pretty sure I'm making that trip out there. I'm excited for it. I don't know why it's Birmingham, but I get to hang out with Perkins at least.
Yeah, exactly. That's always a good time.
All right, St. Louis preview. There's not really a huge one because it's still beginning of the season, but our first kind of preview of an upcoming opponent. Last year, they finished 14, 11, and 9, eighth in the Western Conference. It was an even year, so even years they're in the West, odd years they're in the East apparently. They lost first round of the playoffs 4-0 to Orange County, who I think was the number one seed. Yeah, if they were the eighth, they would have been number one. So far this year, 2-0-0, third in the Eastern Conference on goal differential, one behind us. They defeated Indy 11 2-1 on opening weekend and won 1-0 at Nashville. So St. Louis seems to be getting – and I'm going to go back to this article that I asked you, the Q&A article. St. Louis is getting a lot of looks right now, a lot of attention because of – you know, they knocked off Indy 11, who, you know, is basically last year's Cincinnati team, signed a lot of their players. So we're kind of pegged as a big preseason favorite. And then Nashville SC, who everyone assumes is just going to be good because they're going to MLS next year. And I think they've got one or two of their MLS players already under contract for them, but have gotten off to a rocky start. I noticed someone, I got to go back and look and see. I think it was Pendleton that started this, but it feels like Nashville's kind of just doing the we're just here so we don't get fined. Like, the fans are into it, but the team doesn't seem to be putting a whole lot of emphasis on this season. They've already announced their head coach, their current head coach, is going to be their MLS head coach. They're already using their MLS logo, which is not the logo that is on their uniforms right now. some people are saying the attendance numbers are down. I haven't looked at them to see. I'm sure Pendleton will put a graphic out at some point with that kind of stuff. But it seems to a lot of people that Nashville's kind of fallen off from last year. And we know Indy's got some good players, good returning players and good players they've signed. But it seems like St. Louis is kind of getting the hype train behind them because of these results. Are these results really as impressive as they sound like, do you think?
It's been 2 weeks. Why are we going, like, why are people going overboard? It's been two games, two dose. And if you're going to, you know, throw away Indy's chances now, you're ridiculous. And if you're giving us or St. Louis or, any other team like Charleston, the number one seed or like the cup, just chill. We're as Rowdies fans, we've seen what happens if you get a little too crazy too quickly in the season or how mm-hmm. fast things can change. They're obviously top of the East after 2 weeks, so they deserve some praise and they deserve a look, but let's pump the brakes on a lot. Let's wait to see how, let's talk week 8 or week 10 on where the teams are. I think that's a better barometer than 2 weeks in, because players are still getting into form, philosophies are still being hashed out by coaches. Sometimes you get the luck of teams at the beginning or playing them at the right time before they find their footing. It's a long season this year, and it's time to just pump the brakes a little bit and let some games happen before we go crazy.
All right, so I'm going to steal Pendleton's question from the article and kind of give our take on it. Reddit user at Fat7Deuce asks, it's only week 2, so it's not time to overreact to anything, but let's do it anyway. What are we overreacting to? Who are our way too early concerns, and who are we way too excited about? He answers, not Mike, but the author, responds with, never too early for some overreactions. In the East, I'm a little bit worried about Nashville SC because the offense just hasn't been there so far. Falling at home to a gritty St. Louis FC isn't a huge deal. Did they sign Gritty?
I hope so.
Oh, I'd go to that game. But the fact that Gary Smith's side has managed just 2 goals in 2 games, all its new offensive weapons is. I'm going to skip over the Western Conference stuff because who cares? On the opposite end of the spectrum, I think the Tampa Bay Rowdies could be a team that we might be getting way too excited about. Have you seen or heard anyone getting way too excited about the Rowdies?
USL, they bumped to keep putting us up in the power rankings. But
only up to like fifth place, I think it was, wasn't it?
Fourth.
Fourth? Okay.
But I will say...
We were the biggest jumpers, I know that, in the polls, but I think we were a little too low to begin with anyway.
I will say, first I'll say this about Nashville. I think that one might actually be a legit concern because their offense last year wasn't exactly known for being, high-powered and goal-scoring.
Right.
So, I mean, if, with the weapon, like you said, like the weapons that they signed, it's a little worrying. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say.
It's still preseason for us, too. We're definitely not 2-0 right now.
No. I was just going to say about the Rowdies, like I said it on the Mongols preview. There was a lot of hype surrounding this team last year, and we saw what happened. I keep repeating this cliche about how the teams reflect their manager. And I think that comes... The Rowdies possess a quiet confidence where they're going to have some fun. They're going to show up for it. They're going to be hard to break down, and they're going to go. They're Neil Collins, right? Like, and then with that little fiery bit of him in there, we saw that on the first couple weeks too. Do I think we're going to run away with the East or anything? No. Do I think we're going to compete for a home playoff spot? Definitely. I don't think anybody's overhyping us or getting too excited yet, but this team has potential and we got to see what they do with it. That's as far as I'm going to go. It's like I said, for everybody else, it's too early. It's definitely too early for us.
Yeah, there's a whole lot we don't know, and I don't know anyone who's been way too excited about us so far. Like, I'm excited that we're 2-0, but I'm cautiously optimistic about what that means. I think this weekend's going to be a big test. Even if St. Louis is a lot of former OCB players, since their coach was OCB's coach the first year we were in the league, they seem to have done pretty well so far. But yeah, I'm not, you know, I don't think anyone runs like there isn't a Cincinnati this year. I don't think there's a team with a 12, 13, 14 game unbeaten streak in them. I don't think anyone runs away with the East like they did last year. I think you'll see, you know, three, four, maybe five teams that are obviously a cut above the rest, but it's going to be a fight for playoff spots. Probably a fight for that top five, and then a fight for the remaining spots as well too. So I'm definitely not like way too excited. You know, we still got some things to prove. We still got some, like, we don't. I hate to quote the line, but we don't even know what we don't know yet. Like, there's still so many things we've got to figure out, including, you know, what those things are to begin with before we can start finding answers for them.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Side note, I just logged onto Twitter to see Switchbacks FC.
This the underwear night?
Yeah. What is this?
Yeah.
What is on the pitch in the picks? August 31st is free underwear night, courtesy of the worst name for underwear ever, Sheath.
Sheath. Now, I've seen, I don't know if this is one of those types, but I've seen ads for this kind of stuff before on different websites. There's certain brands of underwear that make a special product that there's some extra material in the front so that you so guys can keep I guess the cash and prizes separate.
Okay, I mean,
but like, you know, if an elephant had a trunk warmer.
Can we just talk about how like these are?
So anybody who was complaining about last week's schedule magnet can just shut up, right? Because at least you're not getting free underwear.
Like, it's got the crest on the like leg of the
at least it's not somewhere else.
I mean, right? Like, but Jiminy, I guess if they were like, here's a free pair of Tampa Bay Rowdies underwear, I'd be like, I think I'm gonna go home now.
If the logo was, you know, like right on the front, you know, and this is the Switchbacks, is that like a Crying Game reference?
I'm just gonna say,
don't even want to touch that.
No, we should make Birmingham Legion toilet paper.
Oh,
can we print that out and put it in the store?
I bet we could do something about that. Next to the Scherzies, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, yes, right, with Scherzies and Birmingham Legion toilet paper. I guess we should maybe actually, you know, support the Rowdies and the Mob in the war against, you know, for the chest, the treasure chest.
I forgot to throw in there. Yeah, the new. We don't have the Coastal Cup, and it appears that we won't anytime in the near future, thanks to the idiots in charge of the city of Fort Lauderdale. But there is a new. I don't even want to call it a cup. Like, we were talking about this kind of stuff a few weeks ago, and I will admit I did have some knowledge about this being a possibility, or more than a possibility, but I didn't want to break the news before they did. The Mob and the Casuals have teamed up with Charleston supporters group, the Regiment, and Queen Anne's Revenge for the No Quarter Derby. Instead of a cup, instead of a trophy, it's going to be a specially constructed, like, handmade treasure chest, because both areas have some pirate history to them. And the winning supporters get the chest full of beverages from the losing supporters area. So I guess, you know, like throwing some Cigar City or some Big Storm or something in there, and I don't know what they have in Charleston, but hopefully it's good, because we're going to be drinking out of it.
Yes, we will. I like the idea. So, I do. I the chest looks great, and kudos to everybody involved that got that done. I mean, it's still trying to build a rivalry with that much distance between us is hard, but Charleston always plays us tough. Their fans are fun. They're welcoming, and the people that travel to and from always seem to have a good time.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do that. You know, Chad with the Rowdy's wagon, the golf cart.
Yeah, yeah.
He put out last night there is a train running. It leaves from like Orlando on Friday before the Charleston game, and comes back like real early Sunday morning, and it's like $112 round trip. So I know there's a group looking into taking the train to Charleston for the game. I might do that because it's like middle of my summer vacation, I think. And I've heard multiple times how good that trip is. So if I could do that, and if I could do Birmingham in the same year, that would be pretty fun. But yeah, that's, you know, everyone who goes there, and Charleston fans that have come here, we've met up with them before, are good folks. And I think that's kind of what led this to happen. It's not necessarily a huge rivalry between the teams or the supporters, but we go there, they go here, and everyone has a good time. Let's have some fun with it, which, you know, is good. It's, you know, what we need more of, I think, in this in the league, especially if we don't have any other imminent Florida teams coming. Go to hell, Fort Lauderdale. So Cody's question, and this will be, you know, a kind of a quick one, but he asked, which USL championship team will stay undefeated the longest? Better question, which will stay defeated the longest? I won't read through the entire thing. But I'll skip here to the end. On the other hand, only Rio Grande Valley FC, Hartford Athletic, Birmingham Legion have picked up two consecutive defeats to open the season, while the Charlotte Independents and Pittsburgh Riverhounds both lost their season openers in week two. Of the five, I see Hartford as the team that stays defeated the longest, as its opening trip gets even harder with upcoming trips to Louisville, Indy, Tampa Bay, and Pittsburgh. It doesn't mention us specifically, but did say that he expects results would begin to even out, possibly starting this weekend in St. Louis. So let's hop to predictions. What do you think you see as a result?
I'm hoping for, I would like a win, but I'm going to probably go with a 1-1 draw.
That's what I was going to go to. By the way, did you notice that I correctly called the game last week?
No, I don't remember.
2-0.
Good. I'm glad.
I am too. Or did I say 3-0? Cody told me I said 2-0. So I'm going to go with what Cody says.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Cody's never wrong. There's really no familiar faces named. There's a, St. Louis has a couple players from OCB. Their coach is from Orlando. I feel the same way about him as you do about San Antonio's assistant coach, who shall not be named. So I want to win the game, but I kind of see, like, you know, Sean Barry being out, you know, first road trip with some tinkering to the back line, which has been strong. St. Louis has been able to score some goals this year. I wouldn't be shocked if we come out of there with a 1-1 draw.
Exactly.
All right. I did have, so I told you my whole story on Saturday, right? Like during and after the game, or I mean during and before the game.
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, so I'll put it out here too, because we're going to have the return of the patron questions. We do have one this week, and it's actually one that I answered, and most people probably know, but we did pick up some new followers and hopefully new listeners after the game, so some of them may not know. So my wife and daughter are on spring break this week. They're just outside Charlotte, North Carolina right now. But Saturday I was like, well, let me see if I can take my kid to the game before they go away. Cause like Sunday, I spent all day Sunday at Shamrock working at their St. Patrick's Day block party. And then Monday was my birthday. So we hung out that day, but I was like, let me see if I can get a ticket, because the tickets that are next to my seat, my regular seat, were still available as of like Friday night. Well, Saturday morning I go to buy them and they're all gone. So I told her, sorry, you know, never mind. We'll do it another game. I mentioned something about it online, you know, just kind of offhanded. Cody from Hard Rock jumped in, said, I've got you. I've got two tickets in the midfield for you. Bring the kid. We're going to have a good time. So we get out there. We go to the Skyway tailgate, which you stopped by there too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fire truck, baby. How sweet was that?
Yeah, I told Ian he needs to, you know, get that here every game.
It won't be every game, but it'll definitely be more than just the first game. The guy who actually owns that fire truck is a friend of Ian's, and he had a very good time Saturday. Like, he had to leave probably, you know, middle second half, because it takes a while to get that thing over the skyway and back. So he took off. But I mean, the thing had two TVs, an audio system, a PS4. But Ian met up with him on Sunday morning to, you know, give him some of the gear and equipment and stuff back. And the guy was still talking about the good time he had at the game. So he sat with them in the mob section. So, you know, a lot of people who made their first trips to the game had a good time, and good for them. So we went to the tailgate for a while. They made some great tacos. I didn't even get a chance to try the new food trucks because we had so many tacos at the Skyway tailgate. But we go in, Cody manages to get us into the pregame, like, VIP corner, area where they've got, snacks and drinks. And one of I guess technically he's a Rays employee, but he was wearing Rowdy's gear, comes over, says, "Hey, does your kid want to be on the field for the walkout tunnel?" And she's done it before with Girl Scouts, but I was like, "Yeah, sure. That's cool." So we're walking over there. The guy's, you know, he's introducing me to parents of other kids that we're walking with. You know, this is Matt. He works at Hard Rock. And I kind of let it go for a little bit because I didn't want to, you know, ruin something for my kid if it was like a partner only kind of thing. So I was going to try and take advantage of it. He comes back to me at one point, says, you know, "So what do you do at Hard Rock?" And I said, "Well, you know, I sometimes go there and gamble, mostly lose money. So that's pretty much what I do." He's like, "Oh, you don't work there?" No, it's my friend does. He's, "Oh, okay." So we're down there on the sideline when the mob's doing the drums and the O during the national anthem, and then the TIFO, which was fantastic. I didn't know about. I had kind of heard, you know, saw what it was going to look like, but I didn't know about the middle part being retractable, I guess is the way to say it. That came out really good. It looked really good from the sidelines too. With the mob and the smoke coming out of it. So hats off to them as usual for that. But the same guy standing behind me with his wife, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't know who this Ralph guy is." You know? And that was our patron question of the week. It all kind of ties in, for people who don't know, who is Ralph, and what's the origin of the name? So, you know, one of the pictures we saw earlier last week was that they had put up some new signage around the stadium on the outside, some new decor, whatever. They took the football playbook stuff down, which I was happy to see. But some of the stuff has the old Rowdy's logo with the dude running around chasing the soccer ball. Well, the dude is Ralph Rowdy. So when the team came back from their hiatus, the supporters group was started and named Ralph's Mob, as in kind of an homage to the original Ralph Rowdy. The second part of the question was, why does the mob yell "O" during the national anthem? Like, the guy who sent the question says he gets it. You know, it wasn't like complaining about it, but just didn't know if there was a certain reason why. You know, he said, like, it to him, it makes sense if the Baltimore Orioles do it because, you know, the O's. Why does the mob do it? It's just a thing they do, I guess. I don't know if there's any specific reason why that one part, other than just it's an opportunity to be interactive.
Hold on. I can get us an answer.
Uh-oh. Real-time updates.
I'm going to try anyway. Let's see if this works. Okay, I will try to update when I get an answer.
I'll crack a beverage and wait.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm reaching out to hashtag sources. Yeah, let's see if we get any breaking news here. But, I mean, I always wondered because it's a weird tradition too for us. I mean, like, the few teams that wear red will scream red during things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, good old
Larry. I thought about that.
But I don't understand our screaming of O. But
I think it's just because it's a yell. And yeah. O is the thing you yell sometimes. I don't know if there's a more specific answer, but we'll wait and see. But we do have a post-show engagement we both need to get to. So we'll wrap it up and see if we get an answer real quick we can throw in there. We love yous. Who do you got?
We're going to go with Mike Manganiello for, 5 years with the team. His fifth anniversary just happened. And also, I'm going through the media guide, the notes, the game day notes here. And he put a lot of work to upgrade these things, and I absolutely love it.
I didn't see a copy. I'll have to look and try and get a copy of him next time I'm there.
But he, he continues. I mean, he's been, I feel like this is the second or third time I've said his name already this season for the We Love You, but he continues to kick some butt. And is great and is a supporter of us and the show, so he does it.
I love the little twist he did when we were interviewing the players and the coaches after the game, like announcing the important stats.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. I'm going to throw my We Love You out to this is going to be weird. Don't be upset. To your girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
And Callie and Issa for taking care of my kiddo while we were doing the interviews. She asked if she could bring the ball that I have that I got like a year or two ago to get signatures, and I said sure. And then she told the players it was for my birthday, so I've got a ball signed by like 18 to 20 players now, including some happy birthday remarks that she thinks were from Pape Diakite. So shout out to them. I appreciate it. Shout out to Cody for helping make this all happen. It was kind of a big deal for me to get to do this like on my birthday weekend to suit all for saying my name and throwing a little plug for the show in as well. We appreciate that also. And also just the Rays, like I mentioned, the one guy I talked to and the other Rays employees, and I put this on Twitter, but I'll say it here too. I've said a lot about how they're saying all the right things. All the ones that I met and dealt with and interacted with were very cool, very super friendly, and were very upfront about how, they don't maybe not necessarily know as much about the team or the sport as others will. So when I kind of identified myself as being a longtime season ticket holder doing this podcast, they were like, oh, so let me ask you about this. Like they're making an effort to find out the stuff they don't know about. Rather than coming in and saying, well, we're the new guys, this is what is going to happen, this is what it's going to be like now, it's, hey, what do you guys already do? How do you handle this? What's this like? Which I like. It's a nice level of respect from the new guys coming in. So hats off to them as well. If you want to ask one of the Patreon questions, you can be a follower of or supporter of us on Patreon. I never did get those things updated in time for the first game. I'll do it this week. I hope. You can follow us online there at patreon.com/unusedsubspod if you'd like to contribute on a monthly basis. You have a chance to ask a question once a month. By the way, I did, for those wondering, I did get my Forward Madison scarf. It's right here hanging on my lamp right now. I love it. If you give us a rating and review wherever you're listening to this at, helps us out, puts us in front of the eyes and ears of more people. Thank you to our friends at Wolfface for the theme music, Radio St. Pete for the broadcast outlet. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. That's it for us. We'll be back next week to talk about, hopefully, a Rowdies win. See you guys later.
Peace.
The Rowdies were here, the Rowdies were there, they kicked the ball.